Okay, my talk is Discovery of Young Pulsars in the Cores of Supernova Remnants. And, well, the title kind of summarizes my research. And basically, I started out by studying supernova remnants and in the middle of them in X-rays. And I somehow kept coming across things in the middle, in the center of these. I don't know why, but there they were. But then I went back, and I suppose they're supposed to have things in the middle of supernova remnants. They're called neutron stars, I suppose. But apparently people had been looking for them in radio and hadn't found them for a long time, and suddenly they seemed to be appearing in the X-rays. So that was kind of interesting. So I shifted my work more from the remnant to the central guy, the center of it all. And so I started to work on what I like to call the missing pulsar problem. And so today I want to talk about two of these sources I've found in two pulsars in the center of supernova remnants that are very different, and they're kind of remarkable. And so this is really an observational talk, and I hope that's okay.
Absolutely.
And well, it's a story. So it's a story of discovery, and like every good story, it needs a good title. So how about this one? Tale of Two Pulsars. Now, it is kind of an unusual story, and these pulsars I'm going to describe, as I say, they're very different, but the interesting thing is they're very close together, both discovered serendipitously, and no, the only problem is that they're so close that the only thing different in their name is a digit there. So they probably need some other names like Paris and London or whatever the two cities were in the Tale of Two Cities. But so I'll be describing these two. They're very different. One's like an AXP and the other is more like a radio pulsar. And they have, together they kind of personify, they have important implications on young neutron star evolution, and which I hope to talk about at the end, basically talking about the connection between supernova remnants and neutron stars and whether there's two evolutionary paths that they might take. And so we see them manifest in two very different ways. And so this might help resolve this missing pulsar problem. And it's connected with reconciling the supernova explosion rate and the pulsar birth rates. And so this kind of predicts the other thing about this, these slow pulsars, which we'll see at the end, really predict that there should be the enormous population of previously unrecognized old neutron stars. So just to give a little background, I just wanted to talk, I don't know how familiar everyone is with X-ray observations, but the big change now is being able to find pulsars, these new pulsars in X-rays, is that we're able to do imaging spectroscopy. And now basically your typical supernova remnant has this thermal spectrum. If this is energy, this is intensity. You have this thermal spectrum, and the bottom is cut off by absorption, and it kind of dies off in about, quite rapidly above a couple of kVs. But the pulsars tend to have this power loss spectrum. And in the old days of ROSAT, for example, you could only see over here. And so you basically had a very narrow band. With ROSAT, for example, you had a very narrow band, and you have a slightly larger band with Einstein, but only had short observations. So the ability to detect point source supernova remnant actually turned out wasn't so good for either of these, because this large thermal component would interfere with finding a large background. So, but along comes OSCA. Oh, and the other thing is, you also had broader band coverage, but that usually was non-imaging. So you couldn't find pulsars in terms of recognizing them in the center of supernova remnants. And now along come OSCA, and basically we have a much it's kind of a technological revolution, really, because you have, for example, CCD imagers, in which can image not so well, mind you, an arc minute or something, but can image all the way up to 10 kV. And so here's an image, for example, of a supernova remnant. This is RCW103. And if you just make a cut in energy and you look what you see above, this is between 0.5 and 1.5 kV. If you just look above that, you clearly see two point sources. And in fact, this was the discovery observation of this 69 millisecond pulsar just above RCW103. It's kind of an ordinary pulsar, but it's young and it's very energetic. And the other thing is that using OSCA, you measure the spectrum of the central point source, which was known from Rosat, actually, but it kind of disappeared, and it's spent a lot of years trying to find it again. Here in OSCA, it's very clearly seen, and its spectrum properties is very much like an AXP. And most recently, it's been found to vary, so that's, we'll come back to that story later, because that has certain relevance for these, one of the pulsars we found. Now, this is a CCD image, and this is basically the same CCDs that are being used on XMM and Chandra. So with both those, with much better position resolution, of course, better mirrors, will really, as we know, is making a big difference in finding these pulsars. So one of the main topics is going to be the supernova remnant KES-75. So I just want to give a quick background on that. It's a bright radio shell with intense core, radio core in the center, and it's been known for some time and studied since the 80s by Becker and Helfand. This is like the classic thing you expect in the radio. You expect to see the shell and a core, radio core, which contains a pulsar in the center. But in fact, this is really quite rare. There's very few of these. It's, you know, this typical kind of observation. And everything about it suggests there should be a pulsar in the center. And that's the main point here. And it has been observed in X-rays as well. Let me just show you the original radio image. Here you see the shell-like feature, and the spectrum is like a supernova remnant. And you see the core in the center. And it's been looked at in X-rays by Einstein, and in fact, which didn't, you know, I think it was the IPC. So it's just one big blur here of X-rays. So most recently, the KES-75 remnant has been looked by in 1993. It was observed with OSCA as part of one of the initial observations with the OSCA X-ray Observatory. And it confirmed most of the things that were known about it and got a good spectrum, so that there was a hard core. The core seemed to have a spectrum of a typical pulsar spectrum, power law spectrum. And it was very energetic. It was known to be very energetic, very luminous. The second most luminous synchrotron nebula in the galaxy after the Crab. And its spectral composition was consistent with a massive star. And all the evidence suggested from the radio and the X-ray clearly suggested there should be a pulsar in it. But no pulsar in this data or any of the early data was found in any searches that were made. So
the remnant was just found in a radio survey?
The remnant, I believe, was found in a radio survey?
Yes. Yeah.
Mark Kistelin observed it in a long letter. In the, what, 70s?
So it's been known for a long time. So okay, I should say that OSCA has two instruments on board. One is the CCD imager, and that doesn't have any, it's a very good imager, but it doesn't have any timing information except for 3 second, 4 second integrations. It also has a what's called a GIS, a gas imaging scintillator, which has kind of poor position resolution, but has very good timing resolution. So this is a circular gas imager, and here's this the image from it, and this is the image just of that supernova remnant and core, just a big blur. This is KES-75. And in fact, there was an unknown source here, but at the time when this picture was made originally, it was just unnoticed as well. Which is, it's kind of funny. Okay, so it's going to turn out interesting. So it's not a terribly exciting image, but it's in this large range here. Now, okay, I'm going to skip around a little bit because I'm giving the historical story here a little bit. So now we're going to skip right ahead, and in that unknown source, an unnoticed, an unloved source or whatever, there was discovered a 7-second pulsar, which is quite unexpected. And let me just show you what happens here. Here's a discovery image, if you like. If you make an image, if you have a pulsations, let me just show you what the pulsations look like quickly. So there's the light curve, if you like, the pulse profile, two pulse profiles. And if you just make an image, you in the on, if you like, and off, and subtract the two, and see what you have left. You will get something like this, which is the contours. Now, this what didn't look very bright before is now absolutely obvious. That's where the pulsations are coming from, and that's what we like to see. That's 7 seconds with a spectrum that's this is quite remarkable. In fact, it's almost unphysical to have a parallel index like that in an X-ray. It's probably a black body, but a very hot black body. And it very, very, this is a typical X-ray spectrum. I don't know if anybody works with that, but you see it's a very good fit, in fact. It's over the full band here. This is typical of an AXP, this kind of spectrum. If you estimate the, one thing is we don't know where this source is located, how far away, but we estimate the 15 kiloparsecs, and then you can get a luminosity that's typical of the AXPs as well. So almost all the properties, the spin period, everything except we don't have a spin down period yet, suggests an AXP. So
why is power law that steep unphysical?
Well, first of all, you don't see anything like that anywhere else. In the sun?
See an X-ray burst in the sun.
Oh, that's right. Well, there's some. Yeah. Well, there's not a burst, I don't think.
So, it's.
Well, you can have one, but it's just that it's not seen in any typical.
Seen it before, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, obviously, if it turns out to be a hot black body, it's equally interesting. But then you'd love to distinguish.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not the first thing that comes on. First, you see maybe it is, although it's a good fit. You want to model that.
I mean, I have high energy electron beams in the sun colliding with the atmosphere making X-rays. Why couldn't I do that in a ultra strong magnetized neutron star?
Well, I except that you'd need that to be to have, this seem like it's steady over a whole a whole observation.
Electron beam going all the time.
Possibly, okay.
On the other hand, how good is the black body fit?
It's as good as the data will allow, yeah.
How was the temperature you get there?
About 0.6 kV.
What's wrong with that?
No, nothing wrong with that. That's fine. So, anyhow, this was actually, I should say, that was independently found at the same time in the database because it was found during automatic search. You know, this is much, in 1997, the data was taken in 1993, which is a little remarkable. But we did an automatic search and found it, and a group in Japan was also doing automatic searches through the OSCA data. They found it at the same time. We essentially published at the same time. And now we work together on this source, so everybody's happy. So it is a, there's a 7-second source.
It seems to me that sounds like a story behind that statement.
Well.
And it wasn't that second for Chandra.
No, it wasn't. Or XMM. I think someone else got it for XMM. Yeah, I was a little surprised. It looked like a perfect XMM target because, as you'll see, you need to look deeply. Yeah, well, I'm getting ahead of myself, though. Anyhow, it's a typical AXV except no pulsations and no P dot. So of course we want to get a P dot. So you go and you put in proposals. Say we got to look at it again. So we did, and so we got some follow up observations, which were really surprising because we thought you just look at it again, you know exactly where it is, you get another P, you get a P dot, easy, right? Well, we looked at it and it disappeared. Essentially, it was gone, which was really strange, you know, and so that's not very AXP-like at all, is it? I mean, kind of annoying. But but instead, we also looked with the VLA, and because there was some suggestion in some radio shell type emission nearby, but we didn't have a very good position, so we weren't sure. So, but we got the time, and we did see it in the VLA, and instead of finding the bright source we expect, we found a faint source right in the center of that radio cell, which I can show you. So here's the radio. Oh, well, it doesn't look so great here, but take my word for it, it's a nice shell. And we found, instead of our points, we found a faint source, and the faint source error circle is right in the center of the shell. So I think we found another association, and which is also kind of like AXPs. So
sorry, I didn't catch you. What was the X-ray luminosity in the ASCA bit?
I think it's like, well, the distance is very uncertain.
Well, sure.
So it's a, you know, wave hand kind of 10 to the 34 hertz.
Okay.
So, but you know, that can change by a large amount depending on the distance. But okay, so everything about this says it's a supernova remnant as well. This is our old error circle, which was very large. This is this new error circle for this point source. Because the original observation was very off-axis, so you couldn't get a good position. Now we had a good on-axis observation. And I don't know if this will show up very well. But here's the whole story. This is the new observation. This is where we expected to see the 7-second pulsar. We see this faint emission instead. This is KES-75, nice and bright. Here, I don't know what this is. This is something else we find in the field. Here's another new source that we don't know what it is either. So there's a lot going on here.
Do you have any idea how old the supernova remnant is?
Sorry?
Do you have any idea how old the supernova remnant is?
This one here?
Yeah.
The new one? No. No idea. No, I think the limit was like 8,000 years, just based on distance and some guesswork. So we found this guy with a dramatic change in luminosity, which is otherwise AXP-like, which then you have to say, well, maybe it's not an AXP, or maybe AXPs can vary. And this is exactly the same kind of, very similar to RCW-103, which looks like an AXP, but it also underwent enormous variation in flux. So maybe there's something, this is something that should be considered now. So, and if it's true that you can have AXPs that are visible for a very short amount of time or for a small duty cycle, that means that there must be a lot of them. And maybe we've missed a lot of them in the past. So that should be taken into account as well. And so this also would help account for this missing pulsar problem. So I just want to quickly So you, this is the...
Is it causing enough not different source?
How do I know?
Two different sources.
It could be two different sources. I don't know they're not the same source. They could be two different sources. But in any case, we found an X-ray source in the center of a supernova remnant. This is just to show this is the other instrument which has better imaging. This, you can see a piece of the shell from the supernova remnant and then the faint source in the center, and this is that new source down there. We don't know because we can't. There's not enough counts to find pulsations. So if we found pulsations, we'd say, it must be the same source. But since we can't do that, we can't know until we have further observations for sure. But it did change by at least that much.
What's the chance of having two supernova remnants in the same position?
Well, we only see one. So. Yeah.
So since you know already what should be the period, then you could concentrate rather well the pulse fraction even with a low intensity source. So
that's
how
right.
Is it constrained?
But I'm sure it's pretty much unconstrained. I mean, maybe because it's a factor of 10 fainter. It was 30% whole fraction before, so you're not going to see much. And there's just so few photons, so that's
so you did not have an SPS image from the previous broadcast?
No, did not. That's right. Did not because it was so far off axis. It was
The
SIS is much smaller field of view than the GIS.
Okay.
I should have mentioned that. Thank you. So anyhow, just quickly, here's the summary plot of this. Basically, you have, very ugly, but you have this supernova remnant. Sorry?
How typical a mess.
Yeah, like all supernova remnants. Yeah, so you have a supernova remnant and in X-rays and radio. You have the X-ray point source in the center, and that's where we are now with this source. So I just want to quickly show that it's like RCW-103. Here's the equivalent image for RCW-103. Here's what the original observation I showed you, the SIS. This is the GIS now. And we see that it's varied as well by a factor of 10. In the hard band, between 3 to 10 kV, it's hard to know if the spectrum has shifted or whether it truly changed. But these are questions that need to be answered. And this is that new pulsar at the top.
Your knowledge, have you ever seen a source before which kept its bolometric, that's hard to know of course, but bolometric luminosity the same, but just did a big spectral shift? I mean, QPOs have some of that aspect.
Yeah.
I never heard of anything like that overall. So now I have a slight incredulity problem.
Well, it's you don't want to discount the possibility just because you don't know. So anyhow, so we looked at this, we got a lot of time on this new source. This said we got XTE time. So we looked at it in XTE. In fact, it took a long time to publish the 7-second pulsar. I don't know, it was kind of slow. But, because we didn't see any pulsations in our OSCA data, and the XTE data was taken pretty much at the same time, there's no chance to see in the XTE data. So we didn't expect it. So I looked at the quick look. It wasn't there to get it. Well, 2 years later, I looked a little more carefully just before the paper was coming out to just double check my limits. And this is what I found. Not at 7 seconds, but at 0.3 seconds, found a serious modulation in the Fourier spectrum. This is the periodogram, by the way. This is the pulse profile, two pulses, two phases, and this is the light curve. Sometimes you have more than one, you have 5 detectors instead of 4, but spectrum, layer, anyhow. This is just a summary plot, and clearly there was some kind of signal there. And then, of course, XT has a very big field of view, so you don't know where it's coming from. So you say, what's in the field of view? So I spent a few weeks thinking, let's look around, see if there's anything around. Of course, it could be from KES 75, but it seemed like, well, if it was, we would have seen that already. But in fact, no, it was from KES 75. And the reason we know that for sure, let me just take this off for a second. Here's that same type of plot where you make that phase image, and this is exactly where the pulse emission is coming from, KES 75, and so we're sure it's from there.
That is the pulse emission. You still have a little lift on the side.
Yeah, anything will give you a little noise. So there'll always be a little noise. So yeah, that's the same, and I don't know if you remember the other one.
Yes.
Also had a little noise here just because there's some flux. There's some flux. There's large subtractions. So here is the pulsar that we expected to see for all those years in the center of KES 75, in fact. And it's more like the tip. This is like, now this is the typical kind of pulsar, that, but it's very different from the crab. It's, everything's, I like to say, a factor of 10 different. But some things are the same, like the signal modulation, but the spin down is very high. And if you assume a B field, by the standard model, that's very high. That's above the quantum critical field. The age is remarkable. This is, if you take this characteristic age, this is the youngest that we know so far, which is most remarkable, younger than the crab. And the age is also consistent with the supernova remnant, so there's not a big problem there, although, you know, these ages, you know, are not great. But since they're consistent, I think you can be fairly comfortable with it. The power law is like a crab, and the luminosity is quite high as expected. And we got a good position too, because we can look at the hard image in the which is basically just, it's, as I say, if you make that spectral cut, you're looking at just the pulsar, and that can centroid pretty well. As good as the uncertainty of the OSCE observatory, and so we get a good position.
Well, the observer is supposed to have cell phones.
Not even OSCE.
Yes.
The I have a question. So the GIS, were there not enough photons? The GIS didn't even light certain gamma-ray bursts.
That's right. I'm sorry. I should have said that. What? I'll get to that. I'll get to that point just now. So we can go back in the archive, and this is the key point, just like you say, is that it's very hard to find with a blind search of pulsations, but once you know where the pulsations are, it's very easy to find if you go back and look at all the archival data, which we had plenty of, to go and put that together and find this period. And here we go. Here's all these observations. Here, and the residuals are just fine, and it's spinning down beautifully. So we have a very good. So we trust our measurements of our p dots, and of course. They're basically two plots on top of each other. One has the axis here and one has the axis there. Yeah, so this is the period change. And these are the residuals. Instead of being plotted down here, they're just on there.
It's basically dead straight.
Dead straight as far as we can tell. And the very nice thing is that we have monitoring observation of that 7-second pulsar for several years coming up. And so hopefully, and I don't know for sure, but I have to check, hopefully we'll see the KES 73 pulsar, and we'll be able to do phase link the whole thing together for several years in the future.
But currently the 7-second pulsar is still not there.
As far as I can tell, it's still not there. Not in any of our data, except the one time we saw it.
Are there optical observations in this region?
It's extremely obscured because it's the galactic plane, very busy region. so there's so you a lot of red beams. So and especially the.
So you can't rule out an accreting source.
No. Oh, definitely not. No, not trying to yet. We don't. We'd like to see it again so we can.
Okay. On a side comment about the analogies, the crab. That pole shape doesn't look anything like the crab in the X-rays.
That's right. That's right. I didn't even get to talk about this yet because I just put it up. But yeah, this is the pole shape. It doesn't look anything like the crab. But it hasn't changed between all the observations.
Doesn't it look kind of like the crab clone in the Magellanic Cloud? There's this pulsar,
16 millisecond? Oh, the 05. No, I don't think.
It has a nice crab nebula around it, but the only pulse I can ever remember is this X-ray pulse, which is kind of broad.
It's broad. Yeah.
Fairly small pulse fraction.
That's right. Oh no, I think it's highly pulsed, high really? Pulse fraction actually. I just wrote a paper about it. I can't even remember.
We can try to fit to black body spectra.
To.
So you said this is power over. It doesn't fit.
The 7 second? The 7 second pulsar?
The last one. The one you are talking about now.
Right. We fit it to a power law.
Yeah, it doesn't fit well to black body. It's been that part, the analysis, the spectral has been known for a long time.
It has been fitted to both black bodies and power laws.
So black body is consistent too with observed in the spectrum.
What do you mean by consistent?
I mean, fit well.
Sure.
So
yeah.
It could be black body.
Yeah, sure.
So pulse shape looks more like from surface than
atmosphere. Yeah, it's a little broad. I think it is. It's unusual pulse shape, I think.
It could be. If it fits a black body, it could be from the surface.
Yeah.
Yeah, it will be extremely interesting.
I don't remember offhand, but it's probably something like 0.6 kV or something.
0.6
isn't too bad. But you can just check. It's
hot spot. 0.6 isn't too bad. Dude.
Yeah. Well, the reason this is 3 to 10 kV is because, of course, you have all the thermal remnant that you have to cut out.
So if the temperature were that low, that means most of the flux from the neutron star is not in that spectrum.
If it's a soft spectrum, but this is a hard spectrum, so the power law is appropriate thing to fit, but it's a good fit. It's what you expect from a crab pulsar.
Meaning of hard versus soft is kind of lost. I mean, 600.6 keV is a soft spectrum. In X-ray pulsar land, the normal spectrum is 10 keV. Is the kind of temperature. So.
Oh.
What do you mean by hard? What do you mean by soft?
Okay, I mean that this is a nice power law. It's consistent with what you see from, say, the crab or any other pulsar. Okay, so if you don't, you won't fit that to a black body.
So then what's this business about how it is? If it's just as good as fit but a 6.6 keV black body.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember what the... you can always usually fit a black body, an absorbed black body that will simulate. You rarely can with like you said, with number of photons, you rarely can exclude that.
Okay, but that if there is enough photons, you would not be able to fit into black body. It indeed, I know, both the spectrum and the pulse shape, it resembles that LMC pulse of black body. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing unusual that it's a pure power law. The power law is pretty hard. have enough photons, there is always some excess colors at high energies.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Blackbody effects, makes no sense here.
Yeah, but the spectrum for this source, the KES-75, Helfand and Blayton had, that paper is perfectly able to fit it fine, and they quote some numbers. I don't have it off the top of my head, but they fit both models, I believe.
Anyway, it must be absorbed this chamber.
I hope so.
That's what you have to compete with all the cosmologists in order to observe it.
I have to try and make a cosmological link in. Anyhow, so this is a cool guy. That's basically what I want to say here. And
was the double meaning intended?
No. So. What's amazing is that this is basically a supernova remnant shell with a classical pulsar inside it, with properties that are younger than the crab, very different than the crabs in many respects, and the crab has always been taken as the canonical pulsar. But here, what if we found this first? How would we see the whole? How would the field have evolved? One might consider that you don't need to have these. But they should, if they're born fast, they might slow down quickly, or they might not be born as fast. And those, we shouldn't be locked into the crab as the canonical pulsar, is basically what I get out of this.
Have you tried comparing it more both it and its remnant to the 0540?
Well, that's the 50 millisecond pulsar. And it's also, yes, here, let me, in fact, let's do that right now then.
5300.
But here they are. Here's the crowd-like pulsars. I don't know if I got everyone, but here's the new one. And if you look at the PP dot characteristics, time and magnetic field, you can see that there's a natural gradient here. And here's 0540, which you mentioned. So here's the comparative properties, and the inferred magnetic field is a factor of 10 difference. And they're both young, of course. And so, anyhow.
So all of these have radio detection, except the first one.
This doesn't have radio. Okay. It might
first
be too far.
The red one and the last one that might
have radio. No radio pulsations. No radio pulsations. I think these three have radio pulsations. So the only other radio pulsar that's anywhere near, fits in the PP dot diagram, if you like, anywhere near, is this guy over here, 1119. And that was just found. That's one of these new ones from the Park Survey. And well, it's nice to have Fernando across the hall from me, so we can discuss these things. And but the difference about this guy, and here's another thing that people should be aware of: it doesn't have a similar bright radio or X-ray Plarion, if you like Plarion. I don't even like that name anymore. But the point is, it's another possible manifestation of a pulsar in the center of a supernova remnant, although I don't think this has a supernova remnant, or it hasn't been found.
Eric, is there any chance of measuring a breaking index?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope for the KES-75?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope that all these XTE observations will have KES-75 in the wing somewhere, and we'll be able to phase link it, and then look for glitches or for being able to figure out the breaking index. That would be extremely interesting. I put in a proposal written in one day for XTE for a dedicated look at this guy, and I don't know how it'll do, but hopefully get some more time. And then there was a question of how it compares to the crab. I'll just put that up just for a second, let you look at that. And just for fun, when this paper came out, I received this paper in the mail, in which this person here suggests that they went back to the historical records and think they found what they call a postar, which is something undefined fuzz on the sky that was new, that might be a comet or might be a new star or something 500 years ago. And they're suggesting that the problem is that the KES-75 is really far away. It's on the other side of the galaxy. And so the problem is that's why it's been very hard to see in the optical. But the point here is that in order for it to have been seen at that time, then it would have to have been an extraordinary supernova remnant. And so the idea is that it was a hypernova. So it was a hypernova that was seen at this time, and and somehow this person says it's connected with magnetars. So here we have everything kind of put together. So that's kind of fun.
So this magnitude is what I see at the very bottom line. It's on
the maximum life to be, yeah.
But then I explain also why it has not been seen in the from Western countries, because that's the time of Tycho, Kepler, all these guys.
I don't know.
So, I don't. Not the time in which Chinese were the only good astronomers.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. You can argue with this person.
I was just asking you whether they mentioned this problem in the paper.
I don't remember them mentioning anything about it. They went to some historical records that they knew about and looked it up. But
in their defense, just because professional astronomers are looking doesn't mean that they're paying attention to things that are surprises. All too many professional astronomers are dedicated to studying what they knew they were going to study.
Ooh, such a critic.
And probably just poorly seen from Europe.
Yeah, this is actually I don't think this is it. No, this is in the... This is on the galactic plane. This would have been seen from Australia. So there's no... kangaroo sort. Aborigines, I don't know.
Was minus two.
Yeah, minus two.
Yeah.
But 18... what was it?
Not so bad.
Seen something.
I might have seen it, but they're not keeping very correctly.
Too bad. Anyhow, so I just want to finish up by just discussing what here we have. This is where it's on the PP dot diagram that we all know and love. And we can see here's the crowd, here's this guy, and here's say KES-73. These are the AXP and SGR like guys. And of course, for this new guy, all we have is a period. We don't have a P dot, so I'm not sure where it would quite fit on there otherwise. But clearly, it's in that range. And the question I have for you is, how are these going to evolve? If it turns out that these are variable, and you only see them a fraction of the time, and we've only and you know a lot, say 50% of the say 50% of the neutron stars born in supernova remnants are seen in X-ray, 50% in radio. So okay, there's 50% there, and if the X-ray ones are only seen, and you only see, maybe they vary, so you only see a fraction of those. Furthermore, the radio ones you don't always see because maybe you know they're beamed away or the usual reasons. There must be a lot more, and there's probably a large population that evolve off this chart here. And so I would suggest that there's a large population of old neutron stars that came from the AXP channel that are not been appreciated yet, and that there's a huge number down here. And these represent two very different modes, evolutionary modes of young neutron stars, perhaps.
But no other AXP has been seen to vary like this one, and you don't know whether there's an optical counterpart to this one.
Right, but they have been seen to vary. For example, AXPs...
Like this one?
Not like this one, but factor 3, factor 4.
Even more than that, I think one of those, I don't remember which one, was by a factor of 8 or 10 or something like that. One of the XPs.
Did vary, yeah. That's right. One of the XPs did vary by a factor, but of course, you're pairing different instruments at different times. The calibrations aren't so good. It's very hard. You really need one instrument and you need to follow it over time. So it's a kind of a hard game to play. So I wouldn't want to be too strict one way or the other as far as that's concerned. But it opens a possibility. And also you have this, you throw in the SGRs into the mix, then, and everybody automatically now just associate SGRs and AXPs in one breath. But that's only a year or two old, a year old or something that we've been doing that. So I suggest caution there, that's all. And so future work, of course, we have an active program to follow these two pulsars. We've been, as I say, we already have this XCE data, and we have a new proposal for more XCE data that I hope goes through, that we'll be able to both monitor both of these at the XCE, you know, this big field of view, that's what's so great. We'll be able to get any observation, one or the other, we'll be able to see them both, I hope. And so as you mentioned, we'll look for timing noise and possible glitches and the breaking index, which will be very useful. And furthermore, we've done a deep Fernando and Simon Johnston, I believe, have done a deep radio search to look for this guy, and so far haven't found anything yet, but you never know. And there's an upcoming Chandra observation that should be done next week, I hope, if all goes right. Sunday. You never know. Sorry?
According to your date, it's on Sunday.
Yes, that's right.
How long did you ask?
I can't remember. I think it was about 20 kiloseconds or something.
Are you going to be here next week?
No.
You'll hear about it soon enough, over. Yeah.
So anyhow, this is what it will look like. I don't have it. I want to show it to you, but I can't. But this is KESS 73, and the same kind of thing, a shell and a point source in the center. So it will look something like that. This is a ROSAT image.
So does this classify, excuse me for using the word, but does it classify as, KESS 73 classifies as a clarion? It looks pretty filled.
Yes, it definitely in the old terms of clarion, but I didn't want to talk too much about it, but I think we have to get rid of the word clarion, because I think there's maybe four classes of, we need four classes which are very distinct and not muddle it all together, which I think is confusing the issue.
But what I'm more interested in is the terminology is that if this is really such a strong field pulsar, you have, and it looks like an example of surrounding supernova remnant, which has more or less filled image, in contrast to something like Cass A, which is not a hell of a lot younger, which has no filled image. And there, you know, our usual thought has been that is a central powerhouse doing that, in which case this is the first example I know of a really strong field pulsar being able to illuminate, turn on its surroundings this way.
But I'm not sure I see where you get that, because from the radio, we only have the radio image at the moment. Radio image, it doesn't look like filled. It looks like there's a clarion in the center.
That whole picture was simulated data.
Which one? This one. This is from a different supernova. This is KESS 73. I use it just to show. I know, there's too many. This is what I'm hoping to see. If you like.
Forget.
Yes.
May I ask a more technical question? Is the way of finding new X-ray fuzzes a technical problem? Is technical job, an artistic job? There's something magic.
Bit of both.
Because as you showed before that you didn't find the pulsation before, and then you found them afterwards. I remember that in G11.2, Kenichi, which is one of the beta actually, found pulsation from the same data on which probably Helfand and somebody was working before, and they didn't find anything. I asked one person and told me that it's very difficult because you basically have to make a fast Fourier transform with a very big number of points. You have to deal with the windows in time for the satellite. You have to deal actually with not with the continuous signal, but with the just short.
All of the above.
Is there now an assessed technical way of are you?
There's another feature. Nice? It was expertise of the people working on it, because remember, there's a new satellite. In order to find coherent pulsations, everything has to be right. The timing from the satellite has to be right. The barycentering has to be right. You have to have the techniques to look through that. You have to understand the data. And so that takes a little bit of a learning curve to get to the point where you can just look at any arbitrary data and just say, okay, do it, is it there or not? But then there's other issues that, you know, weak signals, Fourier transform has a lot of variance in it. So you have lots of peaks. So unless it's a strong, solid, consistent, coherent period which just zooms out at you, you'll have a lot of little peaks. And that requires everything. You have to have enough of photons. You have to have a look at it long enough. And so there's a lot of, it is a bit of an art.
I don't think so. I disagree. I mean, for XTE, at this time, 7 seconds.
Right? 7 seconds.
The noise is just Poisson.
But it's not a noise problem.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So there is no issue. You know the variance of the data. Right? The timing, people are doing much more rapid timing. So it seems to me that, I mean, there's nothing in the XTE data that tells me this is a hard problem, and that's why you found it there. Or anybody could have found it.
There's a whole XTE archive. You can find as many pulsars if you want to, if you think it's so easy. But believe me, it's a bit of a technical challenge because there's big data sets and there's a lot of variance and small signals. For example, it could be a very nice, beautiful signal, but if it's very small, I mean, this has been all worked out, of course, but if it's a very small signal modulation, it'll be a small peak in the Fourier transform. So there are a lot of issues, and it's not so simple to do. And that's why people looked many times at this data set, the OSCAR data set, didn't find it, because it's a small little peak there.
But that was a different issue. So that was that you knew the period you were able to find in the OSCAR data because you knew about
right.
the XTE.
Right.
So you couldn't have found it in blind search in the OSCAR data, is what I understood.
Right.
So.
I mean, it was there, but you wouldn't.
But
it's hard to recognize, yeah.
You don't have enough photons to find in blind search.
Right. But no, XT is very good. It's excellent. It's really good for finding pulsars, but sometimes it's not such a simple thing to do. I mean, you have to be looking, and it's a lot of data to Fourier transform and to have to handle, just the handling of all that data. It's not so simple to just go through everything in the archive if you're looking for fast pulsars.
So Eric, so for those XTs that do vary in flux, kind of like 2 or 3, what are the typical time scales?
Years.
Years?
Yeah. Because during all the XTs, all the
XTs, it's not just monotonic.
It changes, right?
Okay.
It seems to change. Because each observation doesn't show red noise or accretion noise that you'd expect, which is very obvious if you look at an accreting system. You'll see it immediately. It doesn't have any of that. So it's like it's a change of state. But of course, I don't really know. But that's observationally. You can easily see that's not a accretion type, a standard accretion type system at least.
But the
problem is that there are not many observations of that. So one observation 1992, observation 1993. So we know that in years it is variable, but we cannot exclude that it is variable. This typical time of months or so. It just was not monitored.
This is sparsely sampled. And I think I'll throw this on from another talk, but still appropriate, I think, more or less. Basically, that there should be there's a new population with the X-rays. We're finding a lot of pulsars, and these are the pulsars that in radio, very few radio pulsars in the center, supernova remnants. But that was the thought to be the norm, and I'd say that's not the norm. In fact, it's fairly rare. And the crab should be knocked off its post as the canonical pulsar, I believe. especially because of no shell.
But you don't have that many examples compared to the single crab. I mean, how can you say the crab's really rare compared to the...
Because it's so close and it's so bright. You could put a crab anywhere in the galaxy and you could easily see it. And so, but if there's one, it's the one nearby. So that's why I think it's kind of rare. Because if all of them had the property, but they had a different luminosity, then say, okay, they could be, it could be that, and we're just not seeing them all. I mean, there's, but in fact, it's I don't think it's like that. There's, you go and you expect to see the pulsar there. If it's there, you rarely see in radio. You almost always see it. You see much as likely, not more, just as likely to see it in X-rays. So you look at the X-ray images, they're central sources.
So is your argument, in essence, that the original evolutionary story that was, to my memory, first told loud anyway by Gunnan Ostreicher, that all pulsars are born like a crab and evolve due to magnetic breaking with a constant magnetic moment, this is another piece, another statement that story is, gosh, my polite phrase, incomplete.
I would say we should revisit it.
My next comment is, it's been obvious for some years that the story is incomplete. And
all stories are incomplete.
As well as being, in some respects, not right.
I think I agree with that.